It's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
So can you get fired if you don't get the COVID vaccine? We know that there are many places that are debating making a mandate for their places of work to make sure that their employees are COVID vaccinated. And a lot of you, I know, think it's your body, your choice, but your places of work can, in fact, make that rule. And we wanted to sort of look at the legalities of all of this and really understand if there's exceptions. Is it fair that you can get fired if you don't get a vaccination done? And to give us some of those outlooks and to really dive into this, Bill Bloss is here, the attorney with Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter. He's our legal expert on the morning show. And Bill, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. So, I mean, that, I think, is the very first question everyone has. Can you get fired from your job if you don't want to get the COVID vaccine?
And the short answer to that is yes, you can. Your employer has the right to fix conditions of employment. And there's actually, and in fact, in Connecticut, Connecticut's an at-will employment state. You can be fired for any reason or no reason at all, with some exceptions. But generally speaking, your employer has a right to say, if you don't want to get the vaccine, that's fine. You don't have to. You just can't work here.
Wow.
Now, there are some exceptions. As always in the law, there's always a
loophole.
A short answer and a long answer. There are three circumstances where it might be a little more nuanced. One is if you're under a union contract. It might depend on the language within the union contract, and it might have to be collectively bargained. So, but other than that, there's only really two exceptions. One is if you have a medical condition that makes it inadvisable to take the vaccine, then you would have protection under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and your employer would have to make a reasonable accommodation if it could be done. But then the other one is if there's a Title VII, a religious objection to taking the vaccine, and that's going to be a tough. I wouldn't put too much optimism if somebody's thinking, well, I'm just going to say I have a religious objection. Mm-hmm. It actually has to be a bona fide religious objection, and given that no organized faiths have come out against taking vaccines, that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, that is a tough sell. Wow. So, I mean, it is pretty likely then, because I know, like I said, I think a lot of places of businesses are on the fence. And I think initially people immediately go, well, if you're in the healthcare industry, of course you're going to have to get the COVID vaccine. If you're a nursing aide staff, if you work at a hospital, if you've got a clinic, whatever the case, sure, of course you'll have to get it. But I don't think a lot of people were thinking, okay, if I work at a grocery store, unless the union says otherwise, you know, if your company says, no, we're making you get the vaccine, you have to get it. So that could mean, like, if you're not comfortable with it, you're out of a job.
Well, look at it this way. Let's say you own a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you might want to say in your advertisements is 100% of my staff has been vaccinated. It's safe to come here.
That's true.
And, you know, that's not an implausible advertising campaign. So, you know, from the point of view of the employer, I want to be able to reassure my customers that it's safe to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the employer can't force the employee to get the vaccine, but the employer has the right, generally speaking, to say to the employee, that's fine. If you don't want the vaccine, you don't have to take it. But you just can't work here.
Right. Now, what do you think, Bill, talking to Bill Bloss, our attorney from Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter, and our legal expert on the show, what do you think about people going back and saying, you know, okay, so I won't get the vaccine, could I work from home then? Like having it be like a levy for them to work from home. Do you think that would work?
There's no legal obligation by employers to do that,
mm-hmm.
outside the Americans with Disabilities Act and the religious exemption context, but that's going to be between employees and employers.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working mostly remotely. It's certainly not as effective as being in person with
sure.
with the collaboration and the camaraderie and the, you know, just being around. On the other hand, right now there's no choice.
Right.
But again, it boils down to what's a reasonable accommodation? Right now, anybody who's working, who can work remotely is working remotely. But, you know, grocery store workers, EMTs, restaurant workers, that's not an alternative.
Right. Right. I'm thinking like office employees, like if you work in sales, for example, or like in your case, I mean, working in law, and unless you have to go to a courtroom, like you, I mean, I guess you could do your work from home, but, you know, I think people are Zoom fatigued and everything. Like, I know people want to be back in person, but you do know there's going to be that handful of people who they don't trust how fast process it's been that the vaccines come out. For some reason, they don't want to listen to their doctor's advice. They're going with whatever it is pulling them to say no, and that's okay. But in any case, there are plenty of jobs where people have made it work at this point to work from home. And while it's not the same as being in person, could they make that argument? But you're saying that's something that's kind of up to the employer at that point.
Absolutely. Outside the ADA and the Title VII context, that's your employer has the absolute right to say, look, I want everybody back in the office. I want everybody to get a vaccine. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. You just can't work here anymore.
Wow. Have we faced something like this before, like with the flu and things like that? Like, have we had this happen with past vaccinations where workplaces as a whole, for the most part, have put in these mandates? Like, have we seen this consistently with other workplaces? Like, there's no flu vaccine mandate here at my station, but I would not be surprised if they did this for the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, it actually came up in 2009 with the H1N1 flu. The Equal Employment Opportunities Commission was asked to weigh in on this topic. And they said exactly what I've told you, that employers can make this a condition of employment. They did, however, recommend that at least initially the employers try to just encourage people to get the vaccine rather than make it a condition of employment. But then the H1N1, you know, more or less went away, and so it wound up not being an issue. But there are absolutely workplaces that make getting a flu shot a condition of employment. The reason it's a little bit different is because the flu shot appears to be much less efficacious than at least the initial reports we're getting on the COVID vaccine. You know, it's always a hit or miss. Is the flu shot going to work this year, or is it not going to work this year?
Mm-hmm.
But then the other issue is obviously the risk from COVID is much greater than with the flu. So
sure.
A rational employer might well say, you know, your boss there at the station may say, look, you know, you got it. You just got it. We're going to have people in here. We can't expose people to getting infected. Then we have a workers' compensation claim maybe. So. So it's very complicated. I know some people are going to say, gee, that doesn't feel right, but that's what the law allows.
Wow. Bill Bloss, attorney with Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter, our legal expert on the morning show. Thank you so much for breaking this down for us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
And today, David titled his email, Package from Space Dropped in Australia. Well, I'm convinced. I'm interested. David Mestre of the Discovery Museum, what do you have in store for us? How are you?
Hi, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What do you mean a package from space dropped in Australia?
Yeah. Well, we just got a special package, and it was delivered to us by the Hayabusa 2 spacecraft. So a Hayabusa 2 is a spacecraft that was sent to an asteroid to actually collect a sample of that asteroid and return it to Earth. And it just came in, the package was delivered, and it's safely in the hands of scientists. And we've got little pieces of this asteroid inside that capsule. So we're really excited about this special deliveries from space.
Was that supposed to land in Australia?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, okay.
So it took this journey to the asteroid. It was actually, Hayabusa was launched in 2014, and it took 4 years to catch up to the asteroid. Once it got there, it actually fired a 2 kilogram pellet to create this crater. And then that allowed it to see a little bit of what was underneath the surface of the asteroid. And it collected this material and it put it into a little capsule. And then on the return trip, it was able to pass by the Earth and dropped the capsule before the spacecraft headed off into space. And when it came in, this capsule was coming in at about 27,000 miles an hour. So 27,000 miles per hour. So it's a special delivery. This is like it really needed to get here before Christmas. So 27,000 miles per hour. It heats up to about 5,400 degrees Fahrenheit. And with parachutes and other systems, it's able to land in the Australian outback, created a fireball in the sky. So people were looking for this fireball. And then when it landed in an area probably about two or three times the size of New York City. So we had to, like, look for this thing. Yeah, so we had to look for this thing in the desert. And it had a little beacon. And so people were using drones and helicopters and special cameras to determine the trajectory of the fireball. And they were able to finally find this thing. And this thing is no bigger than a Frisbee.
With a little box. Well, yeah, so what's in this package? Like, what is it?
Oh, yeah. So what is in this package is samples from the asteroid called Ryugu. Now, Ryugu is an asteroid that is very carbon rich and probably has some hydrocarbons. And so the reason why we're really interested in this stuff is because we think this material might harbor some organic molecules. And if we can analyze these organic molecules, it might give us clues as to how life came to be here on Earth.
Wow.
So we're like grabbing these pieces from all over our solar system to try and put together a story of how our solar system ends up with life. And we think maybe the ingredients for life is probably found in some of the remnants of the formation of our solar system, which these are asteroids. And we hope that by analyzing these samples, it might help us to nail down what was the organic soup that was in this material to eventually, 4.5 or so billion years later, form dinosaurs and plants and people and you and me. And that's what's really kind of exciting.
Wow. David Mestre is here of the Discovery Museum talking about this special delivery, if you will, right before the holiday season. And I think this is so cool. Now, how long did we expect for it to come back? Like, did it go all according to plan?
Surprisingly, yeah, it did. I mean, I think, we kind of, as we're doing this, we're starting to get better and better at sample collection. So Hayabusa 2 is actually the second mission for sample return. There was a Hayabusa 1, and it returned the first samples from asteroids. But because of the way it was engineered and the way the sample was collected, we didn't get a lot. And so we were, like, scratching our heads, how can we do this better and get more samples. And so, we ended up getting better and better in designing these missions. And we took some lessons, too, from Hayabusa, the first mission. And so we've actually sent its own mission to collect asteroids.
Wow.
So that was back in October when we actually collected asteroid samples from Bennu. So the package hasn't arrived yet. So we still have to wait.
Where is it going to land?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
What? It depends. Come on.
Yeah. So we have to kind of wait as it gets a little closer, and how the Earth is going to be tilted in a certain way, and the incoming spacecraft, and then when we send the command to drop the capsule, and where we think we don't want this landing in water. That would be bad.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Really lose this, and so that's a really good question. I have to figure out where we're thinking it's going to land. There's maybe a probability of where it might land, but we have actually landed samples like in Utah. We actually were able to get some samples from a comet, and so we think we're going to be pretty good that we'll be able to get this thing to land someplace in a deserted area.
Okay.
And be able to collect the sample. So that's the OSIRIS-REx mission with samples that were collected from the asteroid Bennu. But we're going to have to wait until about 2023 before we can get our package. But
wow.
But the Hayabusa package dropped off a little earlier, and that was actually this week. It dropped in Australia on December 6th. That was about 2 a.m., and you could see the fireball as it was coming in. People could see it from
that's
from
so
miles
crazy
away. It's like, oh my gosh, that thing is coming in. That's the capsule with our sample.
Will we ever have like a package land close to us, like where we could see something like that? Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, I'm not
sure. Or have
we
ever had that?
You know, I mean, I've seen, you know what, I've actually seen rocket launches from where we are, and it's really kind of wild. There is actually a rocket launch center in Virginia. It's called Wallops. And I remember that we were sending a spacecraft to the moon, and the spacecraft was actually launching from Virginia. It wasn't launching out of Kennedy. And I was standing on the roof of the Discovery Museum, and as I was looking over Park Avenue towards the golf course, I see what looked like fireworks. I said, wow, fireworks, what is that? And the fireworks weren't going out. And that's when I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, it's the rocket.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. That's so wild.
So on some occasions, you can actually see NASA launching rockets into space from here in Connecticut. It's not often, but there are chances where you can see it. It actually went right over Long Island Sound. I could see it. And then the little firework went out, and then I saw another firework go off. And that was the second stage igniting.
That's so crazy.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's very, very cool.
Wow, wow. David Mestre of the Discovery Museum, thank you so much. This is amazing. I love this segment. It's one of my favorites. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm sure the scientists are really excited about opening this package up.
Oh, I'm sure. I want to know an update as soon as they open that bad boy up.
All right. Okay.
Thanks, David. We appreciate it. Dan Onofrio is here with us now. He is the Bridgeport Regional Business Council that we talk to every single week. And Dan, thank you so much for coming on this morning. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good, Melissa. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. First and foremost, before we dive into today's topics, it was in actually our newscast this morning. The Connecticut Restaurant Association has launched this campaign. I know you and I have talked about it a little bit to get some more support. I know they want state and federal help as well. But the executive director of the association, Scott Dulch, says 47% of restaurants across Connecticut don't think they're going to survive if nothing changes over the next 6 months. That's a pretty steep number. You're talking about almost 50% of our restaurants across Connecticut. I have to imagine that would land also in our area. So a response to this, I know that you try to keep in close contact with Scott, but any idea like what your thoughts are on this?
Yeah, you know, from their perspective, and it's appropriate, is, you know, the state's doing what they can to try to mitigate the spread of the virus, so obviously to keep everyone safe, that's first and foremost, so we can resume business. And, you know, the state, as you know, offered up the $5,000 grant earlier in November that they still need to distribute, which I know they will before the end of the calendar year. But at the end of the day, you know, there's more dollars out there that the state receives, some federal funding that, you know, the restaurant industry is hopeful that the state can dedicate some of those dollars directly for their industry. Because, you know, the $5,000 can only go so far. Mm-hmm. And with winter ahead, you know, in the colder months, people are just not going to dine outside. And the capacity issue on indoor dining is tough for a lot of these businesses. So unless they had adjusted to the takeout side of it, or if they were already doing takeout in an efficient fashion that was successful, you know, it's a struggle for them. So they really need things to turn around, and we see other parts of the country, like in California, they're going back to just locking things down again, and mm-hmm. we just can't afford to do that. So, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, the state can, and the government can come back with some additional dollars. I know the federal government's looking at another stimulus, which hopefully comes sooner versus later.
Yeah, that's very true. And I know that when we spoke with the governor recently, he has no intention of shutting down indoor dining, although there have been doctors across our state specifically, a group of them, not the majority, but a group of them who have said, you got to get rid of indoor dining. You got to shut down the gyms. You know, from the council's point of view, you know, I'm sure some of your members fall into those categories. You know, what's their reaction to that?
Yeah, you know, they're doing all they can to keep people safe and at a distance. And the reality is, you know, it's human nature, right? You get comfortable, you're sitting down, you're talking, whether it's over a cup of coffee or a meal, and you forget that you need to wear the masks, you know? I get it, you can't eat and wear a mask at the same time, but, you know, in the in-betweens and if you're getting up to go to the bathroom or whatever it may be, you know, we just need to be very diligent. And, you know, if we can all just be diligent, you know, it'll help the cause and you know, hopefully get us to a point where the vaccine can get some widespread distribution and get us over that hurdle. But the good news is I know Bridgeport Hospital is receiving some vaccines this week. Obviously, it's for the medical professionals. So there's some light at the end of the tunnel. We just need to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. Talking to Dan Onofrio with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council this morning. Now, there was a pretty big announcement recently, Dan, from the UI extending deadlines on payments. Talk about that and how that could probably really help out some businesses right now.
Yeah, they've been really great. UISCG, Southern Connecticut Gas, you know, all part of the Avangrid family. They've been good, obviously, with supporting the community, but both commercial and residential utility bills, there was a deadline, I forgot the date off the top of my head, recently that came and went in terms of folks, you know, allowing folks to pay back gradually their utility bills. So they've just extended that. I think an announcement came out either at the tail end of last week or the beginning of this week with details. I think it goes into February now. So, you know, so that's helpful for folks that are, you know, trying to chip away at what they owe in terms of the back utility costs back to SCG. Yeah.
I think, didn't Eversource do the same thing? Did they also extend their, I believe they did.
They may have. Yeah, I haven't seen directly Eversource. Obviously, UI covers a lot of the greater Bridgeport area.
Correct, right.
Yeah, so I haven't been as close to Eversource as I probably should be, but I suspect if UI did, I would be surprised if Eversource did not.
Yeah, no, I feel pretty confident that I think they did as well. But yeah, no, I think that definitely does help out. Certainly businesses just trying to keep the lights on for another week, another month, and just continue on. And one more thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Dan. This is the final week for the auction, and if people don't remember us talking about it recently, this online auction is supporting local businesses, and it's sort of an extension of what Small Shop Saturday was earlier this month. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have a great lineup of items, over 30 items. If you go to brbc.org, you'll see there's a banner ad for our annual event, which is tomorrow. If you click on that, there's a link there for our online auction. And like I said, there's over 32 items all purchased to help pay for, you know, we didn't want in-kind donations from the restaurants and retailers. You know, we had sponsors that went out and bought them, or we bought them ourselves to help support these businesses. And the auction is going well. There's some really good items on there. And if you're doing your holiday shopping, it's a great alternative. They're all locally sourced, you know, gift cards and items from retailers and, you know, pasta from local pasta makers. And so it's just a great little thing to give back to the community and try to extend the shop small focus and shop local focus that, you know, that kicks off usually around that shop small Saturday. So thanks for allowing me to mention that.
Yeah, of course. So when does the auction go till?
It's going to run through Friday. So you have until Friday about 5 p.m. We're going to shut it down. Yeah, we're looking forward to we've got over 200 people that are joining us live tomorrow evening for our annual event. It'll be virtually, obviously. So we're going to push it hard there. So keep an eye on it. Don't assume you're going to win if you bid today.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, so go to brbc.org. Again, B as in boy, R, B as in boy, C.org. And thanks again, Dan Onofrio. We always appreciate having you on every week. Have a great rest of your day.
You too, Melissa. Take care.